It's 1 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? Well, they're right here at WHFR. That's where they are, taking classes at Henry Ford Community College, if they're old enough, of course. Or maybe they're in daycare here. Hi, my name is Jay Koronek, and for the next hour, we're going to have the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area on WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Live in the studios with me are two WHFR news team members, Amy Powers. Welcome, Amy.
Good afternoon. How are you, Jay?
Well, we're doing fine here, I think, as long as all the microphones are on the right level. I hear a lot of echo back there, but also sitting right beside you and ready to talk Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news reporter and promotions coordinator.
So always ready to talk.
Okay.
Always.
Okay.
Is rarely that something to say, though.
Okay, that's not your mic. Let's see. Okay. And Amy, say hello again.
Hello again.
Okay, that's wrong. Okay. We have too many mics on here. We're getting a hollow,
hollow sound
in the microphone.
Not good. Oh.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have a lot of news for you this week. A lot of things happening in the Dearborn area. Just a little follow-up on the election follow-up that I did last week by myself. Thanks a lot, folks.
No, that was 2 weeks ago. Here.
Yeah.
Boy, did he
you
even
were?
Notice? Yes,
yeah,
with Ned.
We didn't get to talk.
Oh, Ned. That's
it's
right.
Coming
Ned,
back to you now.
Yeah, Ned Opinion, the new Dearborn Heights Council person who is also on our staff. So we have a mole now.
We do.
Although, if you know about him, are they still a mole on Dearborn Heights City Council?
Not anymore. So, you blew his cover.
I guess so, yeah. But good luck to that situation, Ed. Politics is always tricky business. Just wanted to mention that it seems like it's a final number for an official number for the victory of James Schoolmaster over, I think it's Sharon McDonald, his competition for the Dearborn School Board. Also, those people wear two hats, you know, and they're also at a different time, at a different meeting each month that they have to go to, the Dearborn Board of Trustees, the Henry Ford Community College Board of Trustees.
Right.
So they're a trustee and a board member. And I hope they're not bored of doing either one of those things yet. Apparently not, because Schoolmaster wanted to come back as an incumbent, and he was elected not by 137 votes, which is very close, out of about 10,000 cast for that position, but by only 21 votes. So I state that not because, well, he should have got more votes. No, he won. He got the majority. It's a democracy. One other candidate, so he got over 50%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's all it takes, folks. I remember in my high school, I ran for student for a class president. My first chance at elective office. Nonpartisan, it was.
Right, right.
And out of 110 people voting, I got 56 votes.
110. All right. Congratulations.
One by one vote. But
yeah.
I got the job. Okay.
I didn't know his mom could vote. But
the sad story.
Nice.
Well, the sad story is I only had one fellow, nice guy, friend of mine, competition.
Oh, I know this
for
story.
It. Yeah, I guess I've said it before. Just to show you how weird politics is, he came up to me afterward and said, "Wow, it was really close. And you know, I voted for you, Jay." And then I had to admit to him,
so did you.
Honest, horrible person that I am,
man.
I didn't vote for you.
Yeah. Why would you? I mean, you're running.
Well
you
right,
voted for the better man.
In a close election, though, if all these people, if 50% are going to vote for you, you don't want to turn them down. I mean, they want you, so
you
vote for yourself. That's a rule in politics. You don't vote for, even if you like the other person or think they might be better, but you have all these people you convinced to vote for you.
Right.
You're in my way of thinking, selfish as I am, or
that's
was
not
anyway,
selfish. No.
You need to vote for yourself. If you're running for the office and you say, I want it, and a lot of people, half of them vote for you, and if it's the difference of one vote, you have to vote for yourself. I mean, it just makes sense to me.
Jay, the number one rule in business is buy your own product.
I felt so badly about that. And tragically, that fellow died of cancer. So just 3 years later, he was only 19.
Oh, my gosh.
But he was a smoker, so that wasn't my fault that he depressed. He got cancer.
I have a feeling that nobody ever blamed you.
Yeah,
that
was, he was a wonderful guy. But just a basic rule, politics is cruel and brutal, and I have some cruel and brutal questions. tough questions to ask George Durrani. Amy has a tentative okay.
No, he'll be on next Friday.
You're going to confirm, and we know things can come up, but he's not officially. Officially, our new 15th District Michigan rep until I think he's sworn in January.
Or they say until we talk to him.
Until we talk to him. We may talk him out of it. But
talk him out of it.
No.
Do you know what you're doing?
He will be a newbie in legislature, and some of the things that Polidori and Warrenchuk told me, maybe he's already heard the horror stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm gonna ask him how ready he is for being told what to do.
Right.
By his own political party. And because Gino Polidori, I just found out some off-the-record stuff that I won't mention from whom. But
that's why it's off the record.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean I can't mention my unofficial source.
Sure.
To see if he's ready for hardball. Really, with Chris Matthews? No, with the Democratic Party and the Republicans, of course. But I think the Democrats are still in the majority in the House, in the Michigan House. They still have the majority. So
yeah, and that was one of the things that the Times Herald and I think the Press and Guide brought up was that Dearborn residents voted really across the board. I mean, locally they voted Democratic, but there was a lot of Republican support outside of the local elections.
Well, over the last several decades, it has been typical that Michigan would vote for a Republican governor and yet give majorities in the House and or the Senate sometimes to both. What I think is going to be very sad, and we'll have to watch this, in terms of the gerrymandering of the districts for representatives for going to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Michigan, in the last census, we've lost population.
Right.
We lose one representative. Because of that, we have to. We don't have enough to qualify for the number we have now. And yet, who's going to do the gerrymandering? The Republicans get to do it in the Michigan House and Senate and on the Supreme Court of Michigan, according to Jack Lessenberry. And so they will kick out one of the Democratic reps, and they think it's either going to be Sandra Levin or Gary Peterson. They're going to do something. Gary Peters, not Peterson. Mm-hmm. Gary Peters. Those are two Democrats just recently reelected.
Right.
And they're going to combine the districts in order to get rid of them and gerrymander it. Apparently, their two districts are side by side so that we only get one Democrat. So, as well as trying to change the lines anywhere else they can to make it more a Republican equal or majority. Mm. They get to change all the lines in all of Michigan now. Because we don't need as many. And they're going to make sure, absolutely, positively, that we're going to lose a Democratic rep who has been, and this is really unfair, legally elected.
Right, right.
Just legally elected. Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, I get excited about these things, and I shouldn't, maybe, folks.
No, you should. I mean, this is important stuff.
We'll see where it goes.
But when you're going to ask Mr. Durrani what he's going to do, or how he's going to handle things. I think that's a tough call at this point, though, don't you?
Well, he doesn't know what they're going to tell him, but okay, I'll tell a little bit of the story, and that is, and George, if you're listening, is that Gino Polidori told someone that as soon as he got into Lansing, the heads of the Democratic Party sat him down and said, look, you're going to do things our way.
Mm-hmm.
We know how it happens, and if you don't do exactly what we tell you in terms of votes, you're not going to get a decent committee position, and certainly you won't get a chairmanship because you're a newbie anyway, any bill that you want to have passed has no chance in the world if we tell the other Democrats who are under our thumb not to vote for it.
Right.
And you have no hope of getting anything passed unless you do exactly what we tell you on every vote.
Now, the committee things, if I'm correct, a lot of those things, I mean, that's your prestige, right? I mean, that's that gives you credibility.
Well, It used to be seniority that would help.
Right.
But the party will make recommendations as a party as to who goes.
But you do want to be a part of that, of these committees. I mean, that's how things get done.
Right. But you may get the trash committee or something.
Oh, my gosh.
If you're lucky.
Right.
That doesn't have any import. And if you don't pass any bills, how are you going to get reelected?
Exactly.
Things that really help Dearborn, mm-hmm. for example. If you have nothing to crow about, to proclaim that you did it for Dearborn, you're less likely, even though you're the incumbent, and you're very likely to get reelected anyway, but the people of Dearborn, if you haven't done really something special for them in terms of passing a special bill, then you just don't have that to recommend you to them the next time around in 2 years. And so it's really tough, and it's tougher than people think. And George, part of the nonpartisan council, he could be more independent. He could have his own way. And, I don't remember one bill that Gino Polidori did that was directly beneficial to Dearborn, directly just to Dearborn. Now, he voted. He mm-hmm. voted in favor mm-hmm. of a lot of things. I don't know if he differed from the party or not. We haven't talked to him since he got in his first year in office. But I heard that he really was upset and complained about how harsh he was sat down and talked to on his first day up there.
Sure, you're idealistic when you get up there. Right. You have all these plans.
You like to be independent, open-minded. Sure. Let's pass a bill. I'd like to see. Remember Daryl Smith, who ran for the same job as U.S. Taxpayers Party with, and he came in here and said, "Well, I like most of what the U.S. Taxpayers Party is for, but I'm an independent. I want to do some things," and he gave us some specifics. And of course, he's not the one that got elected. But that even if George has specific ideas, or even if Suzanne Serini had some, which she didn't share with us, but even if she did, when she got there, she would be told by her Republicans, "Don't vote that way."
Right.
And you'd have to compromise, or say, "Well, I'll vote for three of your bills that I wouldn't normally do if you'll vote for one of mine." You got to make those terrible deals. Almost sounds like you make them with the devil, because you give your support for things you're not really in favor of. Maybe they won't kill anyone immediately, but you have to do that, or they're not going to vote for your bill. It's all that you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And I keep visualizing that everybody's very bloody from all the scratches on their backs.
But it's a game that has to be played, and I think that comes back to haunt people come re-election time.
I say yes and no. I think Schneider has actually stepped in, and with this appointment of Dylan.
Dylan, sure.
Has already sort of made it apparent that he's not going to follow the party lines, and throughout the Republican Party is already. Said, "Hey, this isn't going to work. We don't like Dylan. We don't. He's not sort of our party person." And
well, let's talk about that briefly. It was in the Press and Guide this last Wednesday, November 10th. Today is November 12th, by the way. The mm-hmm. Journal for November 12th. Democrat Dylan tapped by Snyder. Tapped. He was only tapped.
Well, that was enough.
Put one finger on his head. He got
the nod and the tap.
Anyway, the magic tap that makes him in power now for a top job. What is the job, Amy, that Dylan's going to have? Yes. So in control of the money.
All right.
And making recommendations. Now, of course, Andy Dylan was the majority leader for the Democrats in the House, and he was elected, but then term limited out. He ran for governor, mm-hmm. a Democratic nominee for governor, and lost to Virge Bonaro, of course. But Dick Posthumus has also been selected. Now, Dick was the lieutenant governor under Granholm for all the last 8 years, and therefore...
Wait, Cherry was...
What Posthumus? How did he come into this? It was Cherry as lieutenant governor.
He was Granholm.
Was he running under? Was he under Engler?
Under Engler, yeah.
That's it. A Republican.
Yep, under GOP Engler.
Yeah,
it's but just it's that the name. Fact I that he doesn't have he's already necessarily dead connections anymore. it's the fact that he's sort of been out of the loop for a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he has legislative experience, if you want to call it that. And Engler was known for getting things through the legislature, sort of by brute force, in fact. Because I think when Engler was in, there was actually a Republican majority in the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. So a little bit easier if you can get all the Republicans together, heck with the Democrats.
Which is when our taxes were raised from 4 to 2 cents.
And
4 to 6 cents.
And the welfare system was changed so mm-hmm. that a lot of people... And maybe we should not have welfare the way we have it. A lot of money goes into that, But Engler put into place laws that 1 year or so, and you're just cut off.
Well,
you're
also
just cut off, and so that was really cruel. I think it was very harsh. It was a way to save money immediately, but that was not the way to go about it. I've always been in favor of, and there's several different ways to do welfare. Several proposals have come up over the last 30 years. Daniel Monahan in the U.S. House of Reps and serving under, I think even under Clinton in some position, very intelligent guy, wrote books about better systems for welfare that would be encouraging people to get off welfare. And, of course, that wasn't happening. Just let's cut them off. Let's just cut them off. And that's how I remember Engler, not favorably for that kind of cruelty to people that need support. But not to stay on it forever, of course. Hopefully everybody could get off welfare. But in any event, Posthumus was his number two. But we'll see what happens with Dylan in there as treasurer. Again, I wanted to ask even Jocelyn Benson, and we still have our feelers out to get her in here, even though she lost as Secretary of State to Ruth Johnson, a Republican. She got more, a higher percentage of Democratic votes, of votes, for Secretary of State than the other Democrats who lost, of course. Virge Bonaro lost for governor.
Already.
The Attorney General candidate, Layton, lost for Attorney General to a Republican, and Ruth Johnson won. But Benson got a very high percent, even though she lost, a higher percentage in losing than the other Democrats. So, and in fact, there's a nasty rumor that the Democrats did not kick in much campaign money to her. For that position, you know, separate money for TV ads just for her. And that's a real criticism of the Democratic Party. They just sort of gave up on that and put most of the money into Bonaro's campaign. Well, obviously he needed more help, whether it's that or something else, because he lost 60-40 at least.
Right.
Maybe more than that. So we'll see what Andy Dillon does. Is he part of the question for Colleen Benson, too? She probably, are these people like Treasurer...
I think you said Colleen.
Jocelyn Benson.
Sorry. Yes.
Jocelyn Benson. Thank you. We don't want to give people the wrong impression here too many times without immediate correction. I appreciate that. That's why Amy is here. Dennis, he doesn't care. But
No, I care.
Yes, he does. But
a little.
Amy's very quick. And she has to be. She's our news director. Yeah. Okay. But the question
it's only because I'm in the sight line. Got to come up with
Attorney
something.
Attorney General and Treasurer and Secretary of State, do they meet weekly with the governor? Does she have like a council meeting or a war cabinet with these people regularly? We know the President of the United States has regular meetings weekly at least with all the so-called cabinet members. Although, I don't know, Secretary of State, does he probably talks frequently, almost daily, I would think, with Hillary Clinton, example. We're talking Obama now. But in the state, how do they talk? How do they communicate? One-on-one or whatever? So I hate to think of Andy just stuck in an office down the street, never consulted, and he just has to write reports and count the dollars, which are fewer and fewer all the time. So
right,
he's probably less and
easier,
less work.
Right?
Yeah, or just submit reports of where do we cut or something. We'd love to talk to him someday, too, since he's a local boy, and now he's in a Republican administration. What does the treasurer do for Michigan other than just counting the few pennies we have left? So we'll see where that goes, and that's an update on Snyder's administration.
This article just says his responsibilities include managing the state's investments and administering budget funds. The treasurer also administers a number of state investment programs, including retirement, pension, and workers' compensation. Didn't he want to put all of the state employees under one health plan?
Yes.
And I think there was a reason why.
Public employees
there it is,
under, he had a bill that didn't go anywhere in the House and Senate, but it was a plan to supposedly lower costs to the state for all state public employees, including, but it would expand out to include all teachers working for every district, K-12, maybe college even, and police officers. And both the teachers unions and the police officers unions were totally against that because they would be losing some benefits and coverage if they were tossed into it. But because it would be a bigger pool, you could save the state a lot of cost. And, of course, if you reduce some of the benefits for teachers and or police officers, then of course you're going to save money too.
Right.
Well, so everybody is going to have to tighten their budget. It's not our place to talk specifically about this, but this week there was a report, a preliminary report from a budget commission that President Obama had set up, bipartisan. And it pretty much says, yes, Nationally, we have to raise taxes. Yes, nationally, we have to cut spending. But we got to do both. We got to do both. And they proposed a number of ways to do it. Now, I thought it sounded like, well, everybody's going to be hurt. And that's the kind of collective anguish that even Snyder and Bonero were talking about might be necessary. But right. We don't have details from Snyder yet. Short-term or long-term cuts or raises, whatever. However, very interesting in the New York Times today, just to finish up on this point about the national proposal to help us out economically. Paul Krugman. And Krugman is the Nobel Prize-winning economist, one of ours, U.S. He writes in the Times.
One of ours.
And
HFCC.
That's a socialist from Russia that won the Nobel Prize in economics, okay. But, you know, you might say he's a liberal because he felt the stimulus didn't go far enough.
Right.
But, that to have greater impact, you need more job stimulus. We should have spent more money. And, in fact, we still have about $300 billion that has been redirected by Obama into other things, the TARP money out of the $700 billion that Bush started, that Bush put aside first. Anyway, Krugman's plan, spin on this plan that would hurt everybody because of raise in tax. He said, look at the raise in taxes proposed. It's not so much a raise on the rich, it's a raise on the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this is all very conservative. This is not a progressive plan to save the budget. Yes, it talks about some cuts, but it assumes that the way you're going to get more tax money in is you're going to tax the middle class, what's left of them, and the poor even more. And it doesn't talk about, you know, tax increases for the rich hardly at all.
And for seniors, I think he was mentioning raising the retirement age to 69 and cutting Medicare, Medicaid.
Well, seniors are healthier. Most people are healthier longer now if they've been taking care of themselves. It may not be much a problem for seniors, although we know in Europe, raising the retirement age in France by 1 year. Just 1 year, and they had national protests and riots, and it probably will still happen. But
that's something that they would phase in, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it would take quite a bit of time before we actually got to that new age, right?
Okay. But I thought, and just so people know, is that that so-called bipartisan commission, and its final report will be out for Obama to look at in December. And there's another commission, by the way. He hasn't said anything. Of course, he's on his trip to Europe Southeast Asia and India and stopped in Korea. Well, there's a G20 meeting that he's going to right now. Singapore?
He was in South Korea on Veterans Day. And I don't know where he is now.
But the G20 meeting, which has rejected all of his economic suggestions for the world at this point, hadn't worked out well for him on this trip. Even South Korea said, no, we're not going to allow more U.S. imports. Forget it. We got high-quality Chinese stuff coming.
Right, you know, right. Less expensive.
less expensive at least. But he is mum on this preliminary announcement, and it's perhaps because it seems that there's another budget-cutting plan that's in development by some think tank that he wants to look at too.
Hmm.
But he's going to have to say one way or another, what does he support? What is he going to try to get through the House and Senate? But this is not this commission report, which Nancy Pelosi already said, I hate it all, not for any of it. And Republicans said, well, we don't.
I haven't read it, but I hate it all.
We don't,
collectively.
We don't like this stuff about taxing anybody a little more. So it looks like a lot of people will be hurt, but it looks like the conservatives won't be as hurt as the liberals would be by the current plan, that this other plan may be something more to the liking of Obama. We don't know. But Paul Krugman, New York Times.
One of us.
Nobel Prize winning columnist from the U.S., one of us, he has said, look closer. Yeah, we need to do, you know, we have to raise taxes and we have to cut the budget too, but this is going to hurt the average person and the poor a lot more than you'd ever believe. Obviously, he's in favor, as is the great businessman, the rich guy.
Buffett,
yeah, of course. We've got to tax the rich more. Come on. They've got the money. They could afford it. Yes, they could. They wouldn't like it, but it doesn't matter. They're only less than 1% of the population. But they could really, they can save Social Security with a slight increase. They can save the budget cuts to be minimal, to not hurt the other 99%. We have to go after them. Well, that's not fair. You know, but I'm thinking even with Social Security, John McCain gets Social Security payments.
I know.
Because he's old.
Mm-hmm.
And he paid in for years.
Mm-hmm.
Does he need that money? No, he's rich. Well, because of the woman he married, but and other ways too, and he's got like 8 or 9 houses. Should the rich really get these Social Security payments, and they're minimal, like $2,000 a month. You know, even after paying in for 40 years, you can't live on Social Security. But because he's so rich and Buffett and so on, should they really get those checks? I know they paid in for it all those years, but...
Is that our biggest problem, you know, them being 1% of the population that's...
Those checks are a pittance, yes. But they should be paying in more along the way to all of us because they've gotten the benefits of this country and our economy and all the tax cuts, and, you know, they really should pay their fair share. For example, Social Security, as I'm sure Amy and Dennis remembers me mentioning this, after you make $80,000 or $90,000 a year, you don't pay any more into Social Security. After you've paid the percentage of your pay on the first $80,000 or $90,000, that's it. You're done paying. So if you make $1 million a year, you don't pay on that extra $920,000. Nothing.
Okay.
That's not fair. Okay. For the system to be well supported, everybody has to pay their fair share on every bit of your income, I think. Or let us switch to the U.S. fair tax.
See, that's exactly where my mind went, because it's based on consumption.
Right.
That makes a lot more sense. I don't know. Maybe I haven't been listening to you too long.
Well, again,
it's starting to make sense to me, Amy.
It's a 23% tax on everything we buy, but everybody gets prebate checks to pay back the poor people and the middle class. Every month you get several hundred dollars, and of course, no withholding from your check.
Right.
You get that all that money right up front.
And there's the incentive to work.
Yeah. And no income tax ever, no fighting with the IRS, no keeping receipts.
And honestly, the more I paid attention this time around for this election, the more I think that they take this fair tax out of context and make it look like this evil thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, which is why that constitutional vote went down.
Gary Peters' people used that against Rocky Rakowicz.
Absolutely.
Oh, he's going to go for 23%.
And
it's not true at all. But then again, a lot of people were lying back and forth. George Delaney, one of the few people that in his campaign ads, yes, he said some tough things about Suzanne Sereny, but it was objective facts.
Mm-hmm.
And you can interpret them however you want to.
But if you're saying somebody's missed X amount of meetings, that's just a fact. It isn't it isn't misinterpreting.
But it's also relevant.
The statistics.
And he's
very
not,
relevant.
And he's not, technically, he's not lying.
Right.
Okay. And there's so much lying, so much negative campaigning that was the substance of not just slanted truths, but actual lies all across the board, locally, nationally. One thing I can say to George next week, and I can say it now over the air, is I didn't catch him in any lies,
okay? Mm-hmm.
Any falsehoods.
How did he win?
I know.
You wonder. Okay. People like him, I guess.
How boring. No, I'm just kidding. No, but we're inundated with
we're
all
still
this.
Talking to
but
him.
All this other stuff is going on, all this we'll, stuff, and it does we'll get our out. Attention. Yeah. You know?
This is the new WHFR Journal. My goodness, we're almost halfway past the hour time for our commentator. What's his
Hightower?
Name?
Jim Hightower.
There you go.
Thank you. See, these people, they do pay attention.
It's the first
to
go.
A test. I wanted to see if they knew. Let's see here. Let's have two commentaries from Jim Hightower. One is about the glory of war. You know, America. We were pushing, especially to Korea and other countries, the only thing that we have to sell to the world that they can't get cheaper or better from China is weapons.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what we need in this world, is more and better weapons, right? But we've been the number one arms provider, and we're not talking about arms and hands, but weapon provider for the world.
Yeah.
And is that something to brag about? Because, hey, with all these weapons and all these bombs and guns and so on and planes and tanks, people are more likely to go to war, aren't they?
Right.
Or at least have even more efficient ways to kill people. And that's what he was trying to sell primarily. And luckily, he didn't sell that much this trip. But here's Hightower's comment about the glory of war. And then something that is a water war that's going on in Texas. But also, guess what? Michigan, the water state, the lake state of the U.S., we may have this same problem here shortly. So listen up to Jim Hightower, and we'll be back after that with more of the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, the station making waves.
Our society, like most others, glorifies war. For God and country is the cry. Be all you can be is the manly challenge. Bring 'em on was George W.'s machismo war whoop, which drew cheers from barstool soldiers like he had been. Of course, war must be glorified to make it possible. How else can presidents and generals lure sane young men and women into the voracious maw of deathly chaos and unimaginable horror? As General William T. Sherman put it in 1880, young men think that war is all glamour and glory, but let me tell you, boys, it is all hell. For a glimpse of this hell, check out an October 30th Washington Post article titled Operation Damage Control at WashingtonPost.com. It's meant to be a positive piece, extolling the wondrous ability of U.S. trauma teams in Afghanistan to save grievously injured soldiers. But the article also lifts the covers on the raw carnage that is the true story of war, highlighting 9 soldiers injured in a single week. 2 of them lost a leg. 2 others lost a leg and a foot. 2 lost both legs. 2 lost both legs and a hand. 1 was paralyzed from the waist down. 3 also lost their genitals. Lost is a euphemism for blown apart. But as the Post points out, bombs not only shred limbs, quote, they drive dirt deep into flesh and often peel skin back a foot or more above the bone's jagged end. It takes multiple surgeries over several weeks just to find all the damage. Blood clots, pneumonia, collapsed lungs, and other complications often follow, all deadly. Not to mention the brain damage, pain, and psychological trauma. This is Jim Hightower saying, so far some 8,000 soldiers have been injured in Afghanistan. And for what? Ask them about the glory of war.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Here in my home state of Texas, we're suffering withdrawal pains. This is not caused by our addiction to alcohol or drugs, but to plain water. And to make our pain worse, it's not the people of Texas who are hooked on a destructive water habit. It's the boneheaded executives and greed-headed investors in coal-fired and nuclear-powered plants that generate electricity. And don't laugh at Texas, for the same corporate addiction might be draining the fresh water supplies where you live. Question, which uses more water? Your washing machine chugging out one load of laundry? Or the power plant that provides the few kilowatts of electricity to heat the water for that one load? No contest. The power plant uses as much as 10 times more water to make the electricity than you use to fill your machine. It doesn't have to be this way. Solar and wind alternatives use almost no water to produce electricity, an advantage that today's clean coal hucksters and nuclear speculators don't want you or your Congress critters to realize. Indeed, their lobbyists are pushing hard at both the national and state levels to get regulatory breaks and taxpayer subsidies to let these voracious giants keep mainlining our nation's water. Private interests now want to build 4 new water-sucking power plants in our state, even though Texas already produces far more electricity than it needs. Where would they get the billions of gallons of water they'd use each year? From the Colorado River, draining it and the region's highland lakes of the essential and scarce H2O that supplies millions of people in the Austin area and downstream. This is Jim Hightower saying, wherever you live, it's time for a citizen's intervention to break this costly corporate habit. For information and action tips, go to www.texasvox.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Yes, it could happen in Michigan, a simmering water war. If it gets too hot, all the water will evaporate. Look out. But already in Michigan, we've had this problem with local water, that water bottling plant or whatever it's called up north. They're taking free groundwater, putting it into these plastic bottles, which is a recycling disaster for the world, ecological disaster for the world. I thought CDs were a disaster for recycling. And, of course, baby diapers. Most baby diapers don't recycle for 150 years. The other stuff in them might, but the diapers will still be there. Terrible for our garbage piles and so on. If it doesn't decompose quickly, it's a terrible disaster for all of us. And then water, we're letting private companies make private profit off of free water in the ground, and therefore those communities up north won't have that water in the future. There's only so you think the water just automatically reappears underground. It's just like oil. Once it's gone, it's gone. And guess what? water is closer to the surface than most oil is these days, you start getting whole patches of the ground dropping down.
Yeah.
You get holes in the ground every now and then. It hasn't come to that yet, but it will maybe in a few years. So ecologists and environmental groups like Sierra Club and the Ecology Center in Ann Arbor are very concerned about that groundwater disappearing for free, for private profit, not even a token of money going back into the state. They should be paying the state of Michigan money, some amount, for that water they're taking out to pay for other ecology projects. It has to be put aside. I'm not saying put it in the general budget, but put it aside for just water improvement, water saving projects for the future. Just like the tobacco companies finally had to settle. They can keep selling their cancer sticks. Does anybody say that anymore?
But I think so.
They can keep selling their cancer sticks, but they've got to put money into PSAs, public service announcements, to stop smoking. And the state of Michigan is surviving thanks to those U.S. national federal tax settlements, just pumping tons of money back into all the state legislature budgets to help with health care or whatever they want to use it for. That's the problem. It comes to the state of Michigan. They can use it forever they want to, and they are right now. But oh well.
But the bottled water industry is incredibly unregulated. And I'm not saying everywhere, but in some states, there are three criteria for selling bottled water. It has to be water in a bottle with a label. I'm not kidding. That's the three criteria.
Where it's, and they're showing the tap water is actually better than
many communities. For example, Dearborn has very good tap water. Surprisingly, the city of New York, where a lot of people who are in crowd, they buy bottled water. It's got fantastic high quality tap water because they do purify it and so on. It's money poorly spent, folks. If you really want to, improve your tap water, if you feel you have to, you can always use those little filters on your tap yourself in your own house. But coming out of the tap, it's really pretty good in almost every community so far, as long as we keep putting enough money into our water filtration purification systems as a city. So, money poorly spent on bottled water, folks. And then to have it come from Fiji.
That Fiji water.
Yeah. Mm. Now, the Perrier is actually sparkling water that comes from underground in France.
Right.
Mm. I mean, it's bubbling down there because they got a lot of carbon dioxide or something underground that makes it bubble. So they don't, it just, but is that really going to cure you of your ills?
No, because a local company did tests on Perrier, it's about 20 years ago, and it was, there's sludge in there just like every other. Yeah, no, I mean, there's stuff in the water.
You can buy carbonated water that
just
is cheaper.
Sludge.
Sure.
That if you like that fizzle, which is not healthy in any way,
really.
Dries out your lungs.
Doesn't quench your thirst.
DJs on the radio, we know that you don't drink diet pop or real pop, or real soda pop before you go on the air. It dries out your vocal cords.
Right.
You may like that little tickle. Ooh, it tickles. But it doesn't do anything for your throat or your body. So anyway, hey, we're all so healthy here. So the story is,
teachers?
Yeah. The teachers in Dearborn right now, and this is in the Press and Guide on the 10th, and apparently, according to Dennis and the website that he was mentioning, the Press and Guide is going to follow up the story even more, and it wasn't in the Times Herald this week. But
right.
What's happened is that the school board in Dearborn and the superintendent have decided to go to fact-finding. They haven't had a contract, an official contract, since 2009 with the teachers. But they've been negotiating up to about a month or so ago. And the teachers union, the Dearborn Federation of Teachers, and their president...
Cousins.
Is Christine Sipperly,
who's
president of the Dearborn Federation of Teachers.
Mm-hmm.
She's very frustrated, and in fact, they filed a suit with the state of Michigan saying the Dearborn Board should be held guilty of not negotiating in good faith, also surface bargaining, and there was that other phrase, Dennis, you found?
Regressive.
Regressive bargaining. It was moving backwards.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They thought that after all this time, almost a year and a half of negotiating, that and very contentious, she says, which means they've been fighting.
Right.
There was a big crowd.
They've been
there.
Angry. Well, yeah, at the Board of Ed meeting this last Monday, 120 people.
Yeah.
Well, did you hear her quote? She said, this is not negotiating. It is bullying, plain and simple.
Because they have now asked, the school board has asked, that a fact finder come in appointed by the state of Michigan. That is more than a mediator, because they've already had mediation from an outside source of the state. But a fact finder hearing and that could not bode well, is that from the state of Michigan, if it's appointed by Snyder or the Republican Senate or a Republican Supreme Court, whoever appoints those people, it could come out very badly that the school board will have more ammunition, if you will, to force an even better settlement for them. And as far as we can tell from what Christine Cipperle, president of the DFT in Dearborn, has said, is that they pretty much, she says, we could finally see the light at the end of the tunnel. They had pretty much, she thought, grounds for a tentative agreement and a final vote, therefore, being possible by the teachers here. We shouldn't keep these teachers on a string. Apparently, they have already agreed to salary and health benefit cuts. And it starts saving the city money, in fact, because they're already sort of just going on the last agreement, which means the city, the Dearborn School District, is not saving money, where maybe they could be saving some money if they agreed to these tentative cuts, which we think were part of this deal that they were very close to going to the voters with. And now they're going to go to fact-finding. So that's a delay. It's a delaying tactic. I don't know if they're saving money or not, but the fact-finder could find somehow, you know, you say fact, well, what's wrong with finding out facts? Well, they've already had a mediator in there finding out facts from both sides for several months, an outsider, but a fact finder, oh my God, that could come down to sort of even hurting the teachers more. And yes, as a former teacher and current teacher, adjunct teacher, myself, part-time teacher, do we really want to hurt the teachers more than they're already willing to be hurt? Don't we want the best school district we can? Is, you know, in terms of pennies saved, is this foolish? Here, let's get on with education. Let's support our teachers, make them feel welcome and secure by getting that contract in place. So I have to side with the teachers here without knowing the exact details, but apparently Press and Guide, and I'm sure the Times-Herald will jump in and start following it in as closely as they can. But the school board, it's true, they didn't have their usual meeting of an hour and a half in secret before their board meeting this week because, well, they're just going to wait. They're just going to postpone it all. They're going to wait for the fact finder to come in, who may not be here until December or January or whenever they get appointed and decide to schedule and come on by. So a shame for our district. Even though Superintendent Whiston said wonderful things about the board and the teachers and so nice and everybody's so nice, but we're going to go to fact-finding. Yeah, well, you know, that's, I don't know the whole story, but it's always sad when you see those things up at odds, because believe me, to humiliate and or to insult any progress from the teachers is not going to help the everyday education. I'm not saying we'll hurt them consciously, but actually my daughter, the current story, you know, she's an elementary teacher, middle school in Southfield Public Schools. She wants to put up a sign now, "Welcome to Thunderdome," over the entrance to her door.
Oh, wow.
Because it's such a large classroom?
Well,
so
32 students, 16 of them are special ed students of one sort or another, 6 of them are physically dangerous special ed students.
Have you seen the movie Thunderdome?
No.
Okay.
Okay, well, it's one of those Mel Gibson post-apocalyptic
movies.
And Mad Max kind
of thing. Tina Turner was in charge of the Thunderdome. Where
it's sort a big
of
cage.
It's like extreme wrestling.
Oh, but boy.
Yeah, you put them in the cage and you don't let anyone out until the other one's dead.
Right.
And they can do anything they want to that's fair.
Obviously, it's an exaggeration, but her point is well taken.
Yeah, because, well, she had students that were fighting all day, throwing chairs, tables. She had nothing she could do as a teacher. She reports to the office, and they say, handle it. But, of course, you can't touch them because we already have too many violent kids in the office.
Sure.
Okay. She used to be able to, which is also crazy, put disruptive students in the hallway unsupervised.
Sure.
But then they would start fighting with each other in the hallway.
Right.
So, I mean, it is an absolute Thunderdome, and this is all they can do. Well, with the personnel they have. And she's not even certified for special ed, but that doesn't matter. They're mainstreaming them, as they're called now, in Southfield. She has no special ed assistants in the classroom, no temporary part-time people.
Paraprofessionals
that could help. There's no money for
budget,
that.
Right, exactly.
With all the budget cuts. She can't do any learning.
The fact is,
she's really a good teacher, and she has lesson plans. And there's yelling and screaming and crying out by these people who should They need special assistance. Right. Excuse me, they really do, and there's no money. I'm sure it's a budget cuts everywhere. I hope Dearborn classrooms are not like this. And I'm not insulting Southfield. They may be doing the best they can. I personally, knowing some details, know that some of their administrators are out of touch with reality. They're bad administrators. In a difficult situation, it's true. But this is just out of control. I mean, you often think, maybe some people in Dearborn anyway who don't know Detroit, think, oh, they let things go crazy and they're all crazy. The situation that my daughter's been reporting in her middle school building is one of the worst I've ever heard of any teachers be in. Yes, she gets a decent pay. Southfield, I have to say, their teachers get, they're the highest paid K-12 teachers in the state. She would be willing to take a cut if she could get some help and right. get these people that need special help from destroying all of her lesson plans. Nobody can get any education done. She is overseeing Thunderdome, keeping people from destroying the building and not killing each other, but she can't stop the fights.
Well, you know,
the bad language and the yelling and screaming and the total disruption of her plans. And this is a cry for help from her through me to back to Southfield if they can hear the sound of my voice. And I'm sure there may be some situations in Dearborn where I don't know how in Dearborn, if we had the superintendent, how do they handle special ed here? Do they have enough support?
Right.
Do they overcrowd their classrooms to the extent of Southfield? I know that she has said, of course, her union doesn't want to hear it, because teachers want to maybe just try to stay alive during the day and go home and spend their paychecks. But she would sacrifice a significant portion of her pay, which she's not allowed to do, to even hire people to come in, to subcontract to get people to help her. And that's not allowed, of course. So whether it's the teachers' union or the state monies that go back to the district or bad administrators in Southfield, we got to do everything we can to support our teachers in the correct way, and somebody's got to do something. Remember, things might change in Detroit because we talked about Scotty Bowman trying to run for him. We don't know if he won, that they were going to break up the Detroit board and be elected from individual neighborhoods rather than be elected as a whole.
Right.
Sorry, Scotty Bowman, I'm associating with Secretary of State run.
He also wanted to be a write-in.
It was an open seat.
When he discovered at the last minute there was a new district and nobody was on the ballot.
Nobody. So it's.
But he was trying to get a write-in because he had to do a mailing. He had to raise money so that people would know his name. So that if he got written in, he might have got elected.
Okay.
Nobody was running. They didn't even know that there was a school district election for a representative from their local neighborhood.
Apathy, you know.
Oh my gosh! Well, we'll get the story there, folks. But that's we'll follow this because education is so, in terms of local issues, local education, the education of our kids, the future of our area, and the nation, and all that should be top in your mind.
You know, what was that the documentary that you just saw?
Oh, Superman.
Waiting for Superman. Mm-hmm. And when they were saying the one school in New Jersey that had turned over basically administrative authority to the teachers really turned things around, it sounds like, in Southfield.
That's interesting.
If they could do a little something like that, like even your daughter saying, I'd pay to have an assistant in here.
She is very smart, I think, even if she could be a minister. She was a department head for a while, but now her principal won't give any support. She gave up being a department head, administering the science area in her school, because it's just total frustration and they just undercut everything. Another person on the staff who was part-time now got to be full-time in Southfield because she also agreed to be that department head. But she's so frustrated, she wants to quit now.
Sure.
This new person.
Yeah.
I'll give up my whole job.
Right.
And she said, I'll do it at the end of the year. She's already announced. She can't stand it because she can't do anything to help people.
Right.
No budget. Administration totally fighting every innovation. And no extra money or pay except if she got full. But she's willing to give up her whole job at the end of the year. She already said she would. And so my daughter's thinking, well, maybe I'll take it back on for one less class. Because maybe I can make a difference. Somebody's got to be there.
Right. This seems to be a general theme for our show here. Seriously. Idealistic people.
Well, I do believe as a teacher that there's enough good teachers, if they're willing to put in the extra hours, like that where the teachers took over, they had to stay after school, come before school. They had to work on Saturdays planning,
organizing. They owned it, though. Yep.
But they talk about it being empowered. They could, but they had to be smart. They had to know what they were doing. Right. Otherwise, it wouldn't work anyway. So it worked in that situation. I'm not saying it would work in every situation. But I thought it was interesting that there was a proposal that even administrators should be certified in Michigan.
Mm.
But what kind of test would that be? How do you prove you're a good administrator or manager? I mean, what do you got to know to make you better than the average teacher would be? I mean, you have to have been a teacher to understand what that's like.
Sure.
But then you've got to really be willing to manage, organize, plan initiatives, and see them work through.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh.
And be a part of it through adversity. You know, I walk my dog around Tenike, which is the administrative building for Dearborn Schools.
Tenike.
Yeah. What did I call it? Tenike?
I don't think you said
Tenike. Tenike, yes, sure. Anyway, as you're walking past the front door, you can see inside in Superman colors, you can see a big poster that says, waiting for Superman, ? Underneath it says, we're already here.
Yeah, well,
I thought that was interesting.
The Dearborn Federation of Teachers, Ms. Sipperly and so on, they have started, because it's a national thing, the word came down from the Federation of Teachers, who were shown unfairly in a mostly negative way in Waiting for Superman. I have to say that's true. They were shown in a negative way, even though not directly negative, but indirectly a negative juxtaposition of events and comments. And the MEA, who is the number one union of teachers across the U.S., was hardly mentioned at all. So the DFT, which only reps about 10% of the teachers in the U.S., yes, in Dearborn they do, and college here at Henry Ford Community College, we have a DFT local, a separate local just for us. And I think they're a fine union. They were unjustly criticized, blatantly criticized, whereas they're not even the majority union. Of teachers at the K-12 level. It's a so-called National Education Association, NEA, or locally in Michigan, it's called the MEA. And my daughter is part of that. That's her union there. And I'm not saying they're a bad union either, but I'm saying that you know, Superman is already here campaign, and we saw there's something in the Times Herald this week that's part of that campaign that got press and got, you know, print ads. It's true that a lot of great teachers are still out there, and both unions are doing what they can. I heard an MEA person talking on Craig Folly's show on WDET this morning. Check that out, folks. Yes, on WHFR, we know what the good programming is, even on radio, even our so-called non-commercial competition. The Craig Folly Show, Monday through Fridays, 10 to 12, live. And then in the evenings, it's repeated for 2 hours. It's 6 to 8 or 8 to 10 or 7 to 9. Somewhere there, yes, every night, it's repeated for each day. You need to listen to that. If you listen to this show, and you must be, or you can't hear what I'm saying now, you need to listen to the Craig Folly Show to get a larger picture of Detroit and the state of Michigan than what we even have time to cover 1 hour a week here. But he does 10 hours a week, and it's repeated. The 10 to noon show is repeated in the evenings, 6 to 8, 7 to 9, whatever it is, WDET 101.9 FM, and online. I think they even archive it, so catch that. Okay, David Bozzi, just a word. He's the new councilman replacing George DeRaney because he had the highest votes, didn't make it, but he was the next one down from the last election for the council. Just so you know, he seems to be a solid supporter. At least he got Mayor O'Reilly's support as one of five running in the last election to be elected. And he didn't get elected, so that shows you how Mayor O'Reilly doesn't have total control over the electorate in Dearborn. But we interviewed him for that post on this show. We thought he was a together, rational person. He is the head of Kenwall Steel in Dearborn. He's a successful businessman. But he seemed to us, and again, our opinions on this show are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. But we thought he was together.
Yeah.
We didn't endorse him because we can't do that as a non-commercial station anyway. But good luck to you, Mr. Bozzi. We may ask you on the show in the future once you start getting your feet wet with a few council meetings. The Pressing guy concluded that he'll probably be a supporter of anything the mayor wants. We know Suzanne Serini was part of that group. Tom Tefelsky wasn't. George DeRaney wasn't, even though I know George and the mayor got along fine, it seemed, in public.
Mm-hmm.
But DeRaney wasn't, didn't get the O'Reilly stamp of approval. And he has been independent. He has not been in favor of everything the administration's proposed. And I thought some of his comments were some of his reasons for not supporting the administration, Mayor O'Reilly's positions and ideas, were well thought through, were rational, not just sort of like some people criticized Doug Thomas, who is still on the Dearborn City Council. Doesn't show up a lot. I wonder what his absentee rate has been. He felt, I guess, without Mayor Guido there, he had no real nemesis to fight, you know, anymore. But he is not in favor of most everything O'Reilly has done. And Tefelsky, the number one vote getter, the president of the council in Dearborn, has been against the administration initiatives for the most part. And Durrani has sided with Tefelsky or been independently against the administration many times, not as often as Tefelsky. So we'll see if Bozzi becomes an independent person or totally a rubber stamp-er like Serini was and is. We'll see where he stands. I think he's intelligent enough and probably brave enough, what the heck, because... what does it matter if you're really against the mayor? I mean, does it keep you from getting elected to Michigan 15th rep? No, not in Durrani's case.
Yeah, right.
So, although I didn't see Mayor O'Reilly come out and directly endorse Serini, that wasn't in any of her material that I'm endorsed by O'Reilly.
Right.
She had endorsements, a lot of them,
sure.
By a lot of people, but not by O'Reilly, interestingly. So, so anyway, welcome, David Bozzi. We liked you, if that means anything.
Seemed very
practical. And maybe you want to come and tell us after your first couple battles on the console, maybe sometime early next year we'll talk to you on the air. Okay, we're looking at about 4 minutes to go for the Journal officially, and Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska is coming up, 2 to 6 p.m., the best in the blues, a lot of local blues artists, a lot of good, brand-new blues albums that will be featured here. Other stories we haven't talked about yet, very briefly, I guess this is going to be very brief. Hakeem Fakhoury, local businessman, has asked again to have an extension for development rights on West Dearborn properties. This is...
did you just blow the dust off the one from 2005?
Mm. He's already gotten five extensions. Five times he's gotten extended. I said, and just my opinion, Mr. Fakhoury, but... you've tried long enough. If there's anybody out there, we have to open it up because you have not been able. Maybe no one else will succeed either. But I don't see how, as a businessman, you have a record of achievement with these five extensions, with the initial chance to develop the property in five extensions. I'm sorry, but the city council gets to decide. They weren't too happy about the one-year extension you got last
time. No, they said it was the last one, as a matter of fact.
I think they did. Several people did. Tefelsky did, anyway.
Sure.
You know? And we'll see with Bozzi there. Maybe he'll be more likely to grant an extension. Who knows? There's no reason I would conclude that, Mr. Bozzi. I have no reason to conclude what you would do. And in fact, I think Mr. Bozzi won't be sworn in. Do we know when he's going to be official? Maybe not January?
So
he may not.
Do not know, but that sounds right to me.
Because George doesn't technically leave until January when he's sworn in again.
Probably like the next day?
Well, no, yeah. Now, Ned Apigian in Dearborn Heights thought it would be the next day. It was actually the next week because he was filling an open slot.
Oh, that's right.
By that election. So it's not this usual changing of the guard.
Right.
But Bozzi is filling a slot, but again, Durrani won't technically be leaving until he gets sworn in
That's
January
right.
as rep. So we don't know who's going to be voting on this extension exactly, folks, but we'll let you know on that. Okay, we had a couple of events on campus here maybe we want to tell people about. I saw that on the 18th, there is a job fair of some sort that is sponsored here at Henry Ford Community College. And where is that? I wrote that down.
It's in the Barry Amphitheater.
Yeah.
Is it the one you're talking about in the ASCC building?
It's from the Sunday Times Herald, and it's on page 11A. Okay, I got it. This was a story about two job workshops. One has already taken place yesterday, but the second one is Job Search Strategies, Making Your Search Efficient and Effective, noon to 1 p.m., November 18th, and that's over at MTech.
Oh, yeah.
MTech.
Right. Gotcha.
Okay. But, Dennis, you have one coming up next week.
Well, this is specifically for students. That's why it pertains to all majors. You're talking about.
I wonder if somebody who might be a potential student might want to slide. Will they really check IDs at the door? They won't.
No.
So mention it. Go ahead.
Okay. The Job Placement Office is excited to announce a free workshop on Monday, the 15th, from 2:30 p.m. to 4. That's in the Barry Amphitheater in the ASCC building. That's the big building with all the windows, the blue building.
The tall one.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's Monday for job seekers, and it's called Networking Your Way to That Dream Job. It says the material presented will be applicable to all majors. So basically, it's going to be like a general
strategy.
Networking your way to a dream job, and some of the things you have to take into consideration.
If you're not a student here, I think you can slide in. But networking and also searching strategies. I know the searching strategies, which will be on the 18th, which is next Thursday,
right,
at the MTech Center on the east side of town, Henry Ford Community Campus.
On Schaefer.
Schaefer Road, former location for very old people of the Rotunda. But but job searching strategies, that's the number one issue.
Sure.
But, you know, one of those strategies is, in fact, getting to know people who already have jobs who might speak favorably for you or give you a tip about when there might be an opening.
Right.
Networking is so important, and we're not talking anything strange there. I know many people in the telecom area that networking is like their key strategy. They keep little card files or day planners or computer databases of everybody they talk to who's got a job in the area, in the business, anywhere, and they do emails, they do Facebook stuff to keep in touch. Not hassle, not try to be a pest, not even getting friendly necessary, but professional colleagues. How can I help out your business? Do you mind if I keep in touch with you?
Sure.
When I'm if I'm available and you have something or you know of someone that wouldn't directly compete with you, let me know. You know, and that's
some,
just
so, so many important. People that are already experienced in a particular field, they're so willing to give their experiences to others, their knowledge.
Now, Amy is nodding here in the studio, but we're not television.
Not nodding off, just nodding.
Right, yes, yeah. There's a difference, I know. But you know, as a woman, that in fact, since women sometimes in certain careers, as we talked about non-traditional places for women with Diane Greene last week, there's some actual networking can be done among women in telecom and other careers too. So they're actually within networking groups within the gender.
Exactly.
Because and sometimes it helps to fight that assumed
gender bias
or actual gender bias.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we cleaned that one up.
Anyway. and 30 seconds or less.
That's right.
Tonight, Blues with Joanne Kruczynska is going to start in just a moment. Tonight at the Dearborn Symphony, a renowned pianist. She's very attractive looking.